All right, guys. So right here, you watched on YouTube. I've got some toothpaste. I'm going to take some toothpaste out of the tube here. And then, oh no, I got too much. I'm gonna try to put it back in there. But it's not working. Help me out here. I'm trying to put toothpaste back in the toothpaste bottle, and it's not working. Do we see any issues there? Welcome to Name, Image, and Likeness in the NCAA right now. Locked On Vols, Monday, coming up.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into it. This is Locked On Vols here on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts, the Odyssey app, YouTube. Appreciate you guys for making Locked On Vols your first listen. I'm your host, Eric Kane. I'm back from vacation, a little R&R. Relax and get a little refreshed down there at Anna Marie Island, Longboat Key. If you're familiar with the area, you don't want a vacation anywhere else. It is truly, truly an awesome, awesome place. So hope you guys enjoyed some of those pre-recorded episodes I did with Logan Ward, with our guy John Garcia, with Josh Ward. And of course, earlier in the week when we spoke to Tyree Key, we broke down the commitments of Andre Turrentine and Brew McCoy via the transfer portal. I thought last week was all in all a pretty good week worth of shows. You guys did an awesome job in terms of watching and viewing and downloading and interacting, so I thank you so much for that. This week, looking forward to it as well. We've got another busy, busy week ahead. I'm going to be out of town Thursday and Friday. I will pre-record Friday's episode, kind of like I did last week, but I'll be here the rest of the week, so looking forward to that. It should be a good week worth of Tennessee Volunteers stuff to talk about, and I'm here for it, and I know you guys are as well. Again, thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen. Don't forget to make Twitter Tuesday your priority tomorrow. Get in your questions, your comments, your concerns, all that and more. Twitter Tuesday @_Kaner and @LockedOnVols. I do Radio Knoxville, Tennessee. I write for the Rival Side. If you're new for the show, those are my credentials. Hope you stay around, pull up a chair, and kind of like what we have going on here. All right. So as you heard or you saw in my cold open, I was taking toothpaste here and trying to put some toothpaste back in the toothpaste bottle. As you guys know, because you're not stupid, it's impossible, right? I mean, or you can maybe get a little in there, but it just smudges a little bit more. You're making a mess at the end of the day, right? Well, just as I was about to go out of town last week, we had this SI article from Ross Dellinger, who does an awesome, awesome job. And he was reporting, I guess it was Wednesday of last week, or maybe late Tuesday night, that NCAA officials are trying to come up with regulations and retroactive punishments for essentially programs that have donors, boosters, inciting name, image, and likeness to induce recruits to a campus. And, you know, as all this seems like a great, great idea, nothing is going to happen, or it's going to be just a mess. Mess on mess on mess in terms of lawsuits, in terms of court dates, in terms of all the implications that could happen, all right? Obviously, we speak from a Tennessee perspective, all right? Spire is the collective here at Tennessee, and they are kicking butt, right? They've been voted on by several other publications as the top-ranked collective in the country. It speaks for themselves. They speak for themselves in terms of how they've gone about their business so far in the 10 months or so that name, image, and likeness has been a factor. They're being revered and they're being modeled after around the country in terms of how they're going about it and how other collectives are trying to get up and get going. Again, you know, I'm not best friends with Spire. I don't pretend to be. I don't believe either any of those guys are NCAA boosters per se to the University of Tennessee. I don't believe that's the case. Those are guys with marketing backgrounds. They used to work for the A3 agency right here in Knoxville. And they're just Tennessee fans, you know, just Tennessee fans ready to get things going. They're doing a fantastic job in the realm of, you know, what is being allowed per name, image, and likeness since this thing has been, you know, allowed, you know, 10 months ago. And so, and you know, Ross Dellinger never once, you know, mentions Tennessee or Spy or anything in there. And I don't think that was the objective or anything. So don't come at me like this is a trying to take down Spire piece, because that's not what it is. It's, you know, saying that there are tampering issues via the transfer portal, which is a real, real thing, where you have boosters that are being disguised as collectives coming at you for pay-for-play incentives and all that type of stuff. And I get the issues there for sure, but also it kind of trickles down into the high school ranks where you have, you know, boosters disguised as collectives going in there and trying to induce a prospect's commitment via a pay-for-play scheme, and I get all that. The big thing about what, you know, Ross Dellinger's writing at SI from last week is the NCAA is trying to crack down on those type of situations, boosters disguised as collectives. And, you know, they believe that over 100 collectives already exist. Thousands of deals have been struck with directives and collectives, with some having already paid more than $5 million in a player salary pool, tag for name, image, likeness, and all that type of stuff. And so, you know, on the surface, again, all this sounds great. But the hoops that you're going to have to jump through if you're the NCAA. First of all, Commissioner Sankey and the I'm blanking on the Pac-12 commissioner's name right now, I apologize, you know, went to Capitol Hill last week and is urging federal legislation to help regulate name, image, and likeness. It's interesting to me because, first and foremost, why are you doing the NCAA's job for them, right? I mean, the NCAA is so incapable of doing anything on its own. It's got to have member commissioners from member conferences go out there and speak on their behalf. Just another reason why, you know, Mark Emmert's, you know, being, you know, retiring early, I guess, because he just did a bang-up job in all this. And, you know, it's not like he had 30 years to plan this. It's not like he had 30 years to put regulations in place. It's not like he had 30 years to get all this in order without just saying, hey, name, image, likeness, have at it. Oh, it's going to be an issue. It's going to be a headache a year from now, but we'll focus on that, you know, a year from now. We'll let that be future me's problem. But right now, okay, I got it. You had the federal case, Alsop versus the player. Take it. I got it. Just so stupid, so redundant, and we all knew this was going to happen, right? So the reason why you're going to have to cut through so much red tape, if you're going to try to retroactively punish schools that maybe have infringed on name, image, and likeness deals in terms of inducements. And again, there's nobody being called out in this Ross Dellinger piece, but you know, it's kind of like, what did you expect was going to happen, right? States such as Tennessee have signed amendments to state law that allow college coaches to attend name, image, and likeness events, universities to raise for name, image, and likeness collectives, and name, image, and likeness representatives to make presentations on campus to recruits and to players. That is passed in the state of Tennessee. Governor Bill Lee signed that amendment back in late April, and so you're seeing Tennessee, you're seeing Vanderbilt, you're seeing Middle Tennessee State, you're seeing Memphis. You're seeing all these Tennessee schools already benefiting from name, image, and likeness because you had this amendment in place. I believe that Alabama has this going on as well. It repealed its name, image, and likeness law, so its universities are free to work directly with collectives right now. States such as Florida, Kentucky, and Virginia are among those trying to do the same with this amendment. So you're already seeing some of these SEC states, you know, get on board with this and really changing and adapting with the times. You know, the government and, you know, the Supreme Court and all that is, you know, Congress, they're all, you know, Marsha Blackburn spoke out and, you know, in terms of whenever Sankey and the Big 12 commissioner came out and kind of met with them last week, and you said it's long overdue. Just another reason. She took a shot at Mark Emmert on the way out. I'm trying to find this quote for you right now. But nonetheless, let's see here. Here we go. We've got it right. Oh, I can't find it. Nonetheless, she took a shot at, you know, Mark Emmert on the way out the door as well, saying that this has, you know, been coming for years and years and years, and you have, you know, fumbled the football essentially in trying to get this going. And, you know, for the most part, they're for it. And, you know, NCAA is just trying to urge for regulations. So at the end of the day, this is just such a big mess. It's so frustrating because you had so much time to put these markers in place, to put these boundaries, these guardrails in place, and you didn't. And then name, image, and likeness, along with, keep in mind, the one-time transfer waiver being, you know, surpassed just a couple months before that, all that in one, in a span of just a couple of, one off season, and then you just expect none of these problems to arise. It makes no sense. And so I'll be very interested to see what these guidelines are, what the NCAA comes out with, which is supposed to happen this week in terms of retroactively sanctioning programs who have violated name, image, and likeness rules. Because I can tell you right now, from Tennessee's perspective, ain't broke no rules. It ain't broke no rules whatsoever. Thanks to the amendment put in place by Governor Bill Lee, and thanks to what name, image, likeness was the past 10 years, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what programs are going to be quote-unquote sanctioned, and if they actually will be sanctioned when it's all said and done, because, again, there was no rules. The only rules that were set in place were a name, image, likeness deal can't induce a prospect from signing a national letter of intent with your university. Number one, how in the world can you prove that? How in the world can you prove that? And number two, when you have these amendments in place like you do in the state of Tennessee, allowing members of collectives to speak for, you know, person to person, face to face with members of the coaching staff, what in the world is going to happen here? So again, toothpaste, bottle, can you put it in? No, you cannot. This is just yet another black eye for the NCAA. And again, all this would be great. I'm not saying that this isn't needed. It could be needed. It is needed. Okay, it doesn't need to be the Wild Wild West. But before you allow name, image, likeness to be a thing last summer, how in the world do you just not have any rules in place? How in the world do you not have any amendments in place and guidelines to help you get there? The NCAA, if it was doing its job for once, which it wasn't, shocker, it would have had these regulations in place to allow it to play a fair playing field for everybody, you know, getting off the ground and starting its own collective. But it was not. I think the bigger schools with the, you know, with the, you know, better backing system would still thrive, because at the end of the day, that's what it's going to take. But would those regulations cut it off at a certain dollar amount? I don't know. But those regulations and those rules were not put into place, and now they're trying to go back and say, oh, well, you know, we've let things get out of hand, one official told Sports Illustrated. Well, no crap, you let all this stuff get out of hand. It's your own dang fault. So it's just funny to me. We'll see what comes of this. Great reporting here from Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. I know this was a Wednesday story last week, but I wanted to hit it here first thing on the new week because, again, I pre-recorded last week's episodes while I was on vacation. We'll see what happens here. But if any of you guys are worried, or any of you guys, I mean, I can't speak in absolutes. I don't know what the future holds and everything. But, you know, in terms of what Tennessee's done, or maybe another program has done in terms of recruiting, or, you know, getting student athletes to come to school and everything, even if rules were broken, which I'm not saying happened, but even if rules were broken, good luck proving it, right? Good luck proving it, because you are not going to win that court battle. You are not going to win that core battle. I'll tell you that right now. There's a reason why every single collective is modeling itself after what Spire is doing right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. So it'll be interesting. How about that for a segment number one here of a new week? Name, image, and likeness, the regulations. We'll see what happens this week if anything comes out on it. Again, I can't predict the future. I don't know what will happen, but retroactively punishing programs who, you know, broke name, image, likeness rules. First of all, what rules, and how are you going to prove it for anybody? There was no university point the finger at another university. None of that going on in this reporting. I'm just saying, it's just kind of funny to me how the NCAA is planning to do all this now 10 months later, when it failed to do its job from the get-go. So we'll see what happens, but all that should be coming up, you know, here this week. We should be learning if any of that's in place and all that type of stuff. So, you know, we'll have to see. All right, Ben McKee, VolQuest.com, my good buddy. We'll come on and chat a little Tennessee baseball. Tennessee baseball dropped its first series of the season this past weekend in Kentucky. More on that and what it's done for the first time since 1994 and 1995. All that coming up next here on Locked On Vols. But summer's here, guys. You need food on the go. Built Bar, the perfect snack to take with you on your family vacations. Throw them in your bag. Throw them in your kids' backpacks. Make sure that everyone has a bar so that you're fueled up and ready for all of your summer adventures. The best part about Built Bars, they're healthy, they're delicious. No more sacrificing delicious food for health. With Built Bar, you can have both. It's easy, and you can do it all at Built.com. Go ahead and order right now. Built Bars are puffs. The puff brands are covered in 100% chocolate. Actually, all of them are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means with a Built Bar, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. Have you ever tried those new banana cream pies, those churros, the cookies and cream? All those different selections are all at Built.com, and they're always making new selections for you to choose from and try out for yourself, because they're just that good. You can find them all at Built.com. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, 17 grams of protein. That's what differentiates a Built Bar from your normal candy bar that sits around about 240 calories. Built.com, while you're there, use the promo code LOCK15, and you're going to get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off. That is at Built.com. LockedOnVols.com. Hey guys, I want to thank you so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day, whether it's on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, the Odyssey app, literally anywhere you get your podcast. Locked On Vols available every single weekday morning when you wake up. And we got Twitter Tuesday tomorrow, so get me in anything you want to know about Tennessee baseball, football, recruiting, hoops, whatever you got. And tell us a little bit more about Tennessee baseball. Our good friend Ben McKee, VolQuest.com, joining the show. Ben, first and foremost, we'll get to the series in Kentucky here in just a moment. But Tennessee baseball does something for the first time since 1994 and 1995, winning the SEC East in back-to-back seasons. Because of how things shaked out elsewhere in the conference, Tennessee is the SEC Eastern champion for baseball in the year 2022.
They sure are, and it's something that they should be proud of. Certainly has a different feeling this season than it did last season when they won it for the first time in so many years. And maybe it was more exciting last year because it came down to the final day of the regular season, and you needed Kentucky to beat Vanderbilt in order to win the SEC East. And then this year, Tennessee's just dominated for so long that not really anything dramatic in terms of how they won it. I'm sure they would have liked to have won it on their own terms by sweeping Kentucky this weekend. But hey, they still did win it on their own terms, because although they won the East this weekend because Vanderbilt was able to beat Georgia, they were in that position because of what they had done to this point. So there are bigger goals that Tennessee would like to achieve: make it back to Omaha, win a national championship, win the SEC regular season title, win the SEC tournament in Hoover, but still something that they should be very, very proud of, because it is really hard to win in the SEC, and they've dominated a good division of baseball the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's extremely hard to win in the SEC. And tell me if I'm reading this correctly now. All right, so Tennessee's 24 in SEC. There are six SEC games remaining. Of course, two more weekend series. Both of those are going to be Thursday through Saturday series, kind of like this last season or this last weekend. Tennessee has a 7-game lead in the win-loss column over Georgia, who's second in the SEC East. And of course, with 6 games to go, that's how Tennessee clinches. Tennessee has a 4-game lead over Arkansas in the total SEC standings at 20-4, 16-8. I just think it goes to show you just how well, obviously, Tennessee is. But I mean, there's some good baseball teams in the SEC. It's a little down this year compared, but still some great teams. But for Tennessee to have that type of separation, not just in this division, but in the SEC overall, 4 games over Arkansas, that's pretty hard to do at this point in time of the season.
And Arkansas is really good. They are a really good baseball team this season. And, you know, maybe Tennessee avoided A&M and LSU and Arkansas, and that played a role. But, hey, Arkansas also avoided Tennessee. So that is something. Arkansas is very capable of beating Tennessee, but it is, in terms of trying to win the SEC regular season title, it obviously also benefits them to avoid Tennessee in that process. So the SEC is a little down in totality this season, but that doesn't mean that it's a bad SEC. The SEC is still full of good teams, and you go on the road to Oxford and sweep Ole Miss. You go on the road to Vanderbilt and sweep Vanderbilt. Those are two teams that maybe aren't having their usual type of season, but they still have a ton of talent on their roster. Same with Florida. You go down to the Swamp and sweep the Gators. Auburn's going to be an NCAA tournament team, and they've turned into one of the better teams in the SEC this season, and you took 2 of 3 from them, and they really battled with Arkansas this weekend. Alabama, they're not an easy out. Now, this past weekend is the first weekend you kind of look at Tennessee and be like, hey, what are you doing? You shouldn't be losing to that Kentucky baseball team. But part of that is just the length of baseball and just kind of how baseball works. And the atmosphere wasn't very fun, pretty rainy, and it just was not a fun weekend. I know we'll get to that here in a moment. But still something Tennessee should be very proud of. And as you mentioned, Tennessee is 4 games up on Arkansas with 6 games remaining. And unless Tennessee just collapses, they'll be SEC regular season champs as well, which is even more significant than winning the East, and something the team last year that was very good for the Vols could not get done. So something else they can hang their hat on.
All right, so let's get to that series in Kentucky this past weekend. Boy, it was not a whole lot of fun. You were there, as you are at every single Tennessee baseball game. It went to 13 innings on Thursday night. Okay. You had to get something completed. You couldn't even complete the game on Saturday or on Friday night. It had to be completed the last two innings on Saturday. And of course, then game three. Tennessee's bats unable to come alive in games one and two of the series. For the first time all season, Tennessee loses a series, but does rebound, avoids a sweep. And I think you kind of summed it up perfectly. I mean, it's a long season. And you and I talk about this on the Diamond Balls podcast every single week. New episode will drop later today also. That's baseball, man. I mean, it's got a way of humbling you, right? I mean, you see some of the worst teams in the major leagues, you know, sweep, you know, one of the better teams in the major league. I mean, it's baseball. And so the fact that Tennessee has not lost a series to this point is, I think, is quite an accomplishment. But still, it's no fun losing. It was not a fun weekend for Tennessee baseball. The bats were cold. You had some starters that really struggled. I mean, I thought Blake Tidwell struggled. He only lasted three innings in game two. Chase Burns, he battled, but he only lasted four innings in game one. Bullpen performed pretty well. But overall, just kind of a gross weekend in Lexington. And I think there's been a lot of gross weekends in Lexington, just kind of that atmosphere, if you will.
It was gross in Lexington every way you slice it. The weather, which I do think impacted the series. And look, you credit Kentucky for handling the weather better than Tennessee did. But it was still difficult circumstances to play under. And it's not like Kentucky just blew Tennessee out of the water. Kentucky won close games in game one and game two, where, especially in game one, the ball just did not bounce Tennessee's way. And that was even the case in game two. So, yes, you have to credit Kentucky for battling through the elements, I guess you could say, better than Tennessee. But it's not like Kentucky was good and was just so much better than Tennessee and played so much better all throughout the weekend. I just thought the ball kind of bounced their way, and that's part of baseball. On top of being the most humbling sport that there is, like you mentioned, you go 3-for-10, and you have a 300 average, and that's considered successful. What quarterback on the planet goes 3-for-10 and is still the starting quarterback? So it's baseball. It happens. But it's just disappointing that it finally happened against that Kentucky baseball team, because that Kentucky baseball team is not good. They're barely going to make it to Hoover. They'll probably make it to Hoover because of this weekend. They may even make it to the NCAA tournament, because although they don't have a ton of SEC wins, their wins are significant ones. Obviously, Tennessee, number one team in the country. They beat Georgia earlier in conference play. Georgia, a top 20 baseball team. They have a series win over TCU. So they do have some pretty significant wins, although they don't have a ton of wins. So you knew this was coming at some point just because of the totality of a baseball season. And there's only ever been two teams in SEC baseball history to run the table and not lose a series. Arkansas and Vanderbilt have done it recently. There's only ever been two teams to do it. So it's a rare feat, and it's still somewhat of an accomplishment that it took till the third to last series for Tennessee to play the only bad weekend of baseball that it's really played this season. Just, again, it's unfortunate that it came against that Kentucky team, a Kentucky team that was dead last in fielding percentage entering the weekend, and they just seemed to make unbelievable play after unbelievable play. The second most errors committed in SEC play, and you would not have known that watching the Kentucky defense this weekend. It was a Kentucky pitching staff that gave up a ton of walks on, and I'm speaking on the season, has given up a lot of runs. Their offense is not very good in nearly every category except for stolen bases. They were near the bottom. So it's just not a good Kentucky baseball team. And although it's part of baseball, you just would have liked to have seen it maybe against a better team. At least I think that's the case. That could maybe be a debate or a conversation. But if I'm going to play bad baseball or finally lose a series at minimum, I'd rather it come against a good baseball team instead of a bad baseball team.
You got Kentucky that's tied for 12th in the SEC right now against one of Tennessee's next opponents in Mississippi State. 9-15, the record in SEC play for Kentucky. So to kind of put it in perspective, yes, Tennessee did not play its A game this weekend, obviously lost its first series of the season. It's not the end of the world, but as Ben is pointing out, it came against just a bad baseball team in Kentucky, and that's what kind of makes it even you know, piling on worse than what it already was. But nonetheless, Tennessee will get back in action. It's got Bellarmine, a midweek game tomorrow night, a three-game set against Georgia at Lindsey Nelson Stadium beginning Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll have Belmont for the midweek next week, and then Mississippi State in Starkville to conclude the regular season next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We're going to have more coming up with Ben McKee, bigger picture stuff for Tennessee baseball, and I'll probably throw in a football recruiting question in there too. I haven't told him about that, but he'll be just fine with that. That's coming up next here on Locked On Vols. But let me tell you about BetOnline.net first. It's your number one source for all your sports betting, stats, information. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, news, including this year's baseball playoffs, basketball playoffs, the Kentucky Derby, which is his best weekend, right? All that and more. It was found at betonline.net. And you guys know that I like to put my sports knowledge to use, put a little coin in the pocket. That's kind of the phrase that I have when talking about betonline.net, because I do it every single weekend. I do it a couple of nights there in the midweek because I'm watching sports. So why not have a little rooting investment on it for a sporting contest that I just normally wouldn't care about, right? And, you know, at betonline.net, you can do that and you can help fund some of those summer adventures that you're going on. But it's more than just, you know, going on there to sports gamble, right? You the podcast, news, information, esports, you can talk reality television as well. All that, it's at betonline.net. So right now, you can head on over to the website or use your mobile device, palm of your hand, and learn about all the latest trends and all the action at betonline.net. Betonline.net, it is where the game starts. One more segment left here on a Monday edition of Locked On Vols. Eric Kane, Ben McKee back on. Again, reminder, don't forget Twitter Tuesday is coming up. So give me in your questions, comments, whatever you got for tomorrow's show. You take over the show. Ben, a couple more on this past weekend, or at least one more. Chase Burns goes 4 innings. Blake Tidwell goes 3 innings. Not like that they were awful. They battled, but didn't go far into games. I believe I saw it. Yeah, Burns only pitched 67 pitches, right? Why the short hook for Burns, and any reason for concern for those two guys who just essentially didn't have it this past weekend?
I do think there's some concern. How can you not be concerned, particularly with Blake Tidwell? I'm not really too concerned about Chase Burns. You mentioned the 67 pitches. He was thrown on short rest, so I think that contributed. I know it's one day, and it was still from Friday to Thursday, so there's 6 days in between, and this isn't professional baseball. But that's why Tony Vitello decided to pull Chase Burns at 67 pitches, even with 6 days in between, because, A, it's not Major League Baseball. These guys aren't conditioned to pitch every 5 or 6 days, and he's a true freshman. And he's pitched a lot this season. So,
but real quick, sorry to interrupt, but if I could budge in here, but our friend from the Tennessean would tell us Redmond Walsh threw a ton this weekend. What's the difference there?
Eric, I'm not touching that one. All I know is that in 2022, Tennessee has won one SEC East championship, and Vanderbilt has won zero, along with the rest of the SEC East. So take that for data on this beautiful Monday morning. But aside from that, that's why Chase Burns got pulled, just because technically he was on short rest coming back from his previous start, and he's thrown a ton this season. So I think it is smart to proceed in that manner. And you had Chase Dolander back healthy, and Chase Dolander looked freaking awesome this weekend. He was by far Tennessee's best pitcher. He's the pitcher on Tennessee's pitching staff right now that I have the most faith in when he is in the game. So you had Chase Dolander back, and he was able to throw 3, 4, 5 innings entering the weekend. After what Ben Joyce did against Auburn, you have more trust in him. And then you also have a slew of other arms, Mark McLaughlin, Will Mabry, Redmond Walsh, Kirby Cannell, so on and so forth. You're still starting Blake Tidwell, Drew Beam. So when you have all those options, you can kind of go short with Chase Burns. So no concern really with Chase Burns. The big concern, as I mentioned, is with Blake Tidwell. And I'm willing to give him some grace right now. I'm not freaking out too much. I'm just kind of monitoring the situation, I guess you could say, because he's not 100% back from the injury. He is, in terms of his health, he is healthy and feels fine. When I say what I just did, I'm more so referring to being built back up to where he can just go out and throw a ton of pitches. He's not 100% unleashed is my point. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of grace, but hey, against Auburn, he struggled with his command. And as a result of struggling with his command, he gave up 4 walks in that outing, and it really hurt him and it really hurt Tennessee. That was the game that Tennessee lost, kind of put Tennessee behind the 8-ball there. And this weekend, I don't think he gave up a walk. Maybe it was 1 walk, but the walks weren't an issue. But the command was still an issue. It just had different results. Instead of walking batters, this weekend, Kentucky was hitting him pretty good. I believe it was six hits that he ended up giving up in that outing. So the walks were down, but the hits were up. So you still had issues with command either way you slice it. I'm willing to give him some grace right now, but there's two starts left before Hoover, and it may be unfair, but I feel at this point it should be clear to take off, and he hasn't really taken off just yet. He looked really good at Florida, but has not really looked like Blake Tidwell since. Hasn't been bad, as you mentioned, but hasn't looked like the potential first-round pick that he could be. So that should be the objective these next 2 weeks before you get into Hoover, is make sure Blake Tidwell looks like Blake Tidwell, because if you are going to achieve your goals this season, it's going to be because Blake Tidwell helped you get there.
And then lastly, you brought him out there and you spoke very highly of him. Dolander coming back for the first time and I guess three weekends, missed his last two starts, got hit with that comebacker in the Alabama series, comes in relief, four innings, two hits, one run. It was not earned. Five strikeouts, no walks. He faced 15 batters, threw 52 pitches, 44 were strikes. He looked good. He looked really, really good. And this kind of just goes on to say, I believe this is kind of the path you're going to be seeing. You're going to see four starters pitch every single weekend, because again, you have this weekend coming up, you have next weekend, then it's postseason play, and all four of those guys are going to get some run.
Yes, 1,000%. And when I kind of brought that conversation or question up to Tony Vitello last Tuesday after the Alabama A&M win, he even pointed out that, hey, in some instances, you need a fifth guy. And I feel just as confident, I being Tony Vitello, he said this, that he feels as confident in trotting Camden Sewell out there in a must-win game as a starter. He even mentioned Xander Seacrest as a guy that he trusts to go in and throw strikes. So Chase Dolander, I think he's the guy with right now, because Drew Beam's a freshman, Chase Burns is a freshman. I think Chase Dolander is Tennessee's best pitcher. He's going to be in the rotation. It's just a matter of, do you want to start him right off the jump in postseason play, or maybe do you want to save him for if you get into a must-win game and then you have him on the mound. But he looked phenomenal, Eric. His fastball velo was up to where it should be, 97, 98, 99. I think the line drive that he took off the elbow is going to end up being a blessing in disguise. And ideally, you would have liked to seen him pitch against Auburn, and I believe it was Florida, the other one that he missed. You would have loved to see him pitch those weekends, right? But on the flip side of that, he got 2 weeks off, and yeah, he sure did look fresh against Kentucky. So I think that's going to be big for them down the road. And I really think he's going to be the catalyst of the pitching staff as Tennessee closes out this season. And that speaks really highly of him, because this Tennessee pitching staff, as everybody knows, has a ton of arms that it can rely on.
Hey, real quick, out the door here, really, really quick. Tennessee baseball, should we expect – to see Tennessee baseball drop in the polls? I know a lot of people watching, listening, the polls maybe have already been released at this time, but you know, there's about 17 different polls. D1 baseball, do you still see Tennessee as the number one team?
That's a great question. And honestly, I don't feel strongly one way or the other. I think both answers make sense. I think it makes sense to leave Tennessee as the number one team in the country because they have a long resume throughout the season. But on the flip side, if you wanted to bump Tennessee, I do think you could make the case, not necessarily because of how Tennessee has been playing, but just this weekend as your only sample point. While Tennessee is losing to the worst team in the SEC, Arkansas, the number two, number three team, was down on the road against a top 20 Auburn team and took a series from a top 20 Auburn team. So it's not like Tennessee got help in terms of being ranked number one. Like, hey, they lose and everybody else lost. They lost and the team right behind them nipping at their heels won a pretty significant road series over a top 20 team. So I don't feel strongly one way or the other. I'll lean towards Tennessee still being number one, but I don't think it would be the craziest thing if Arkansas gets bumped up to number one either.
And at the end of the day, who cares, really? You know, what it matters is Tennessee's not number one, it'll be number two, that's for sure. I was hurrying you up there because I wanted to ask you this one out the door. And I've joked, this is switching gears here to the gridiron. The story's been written for a long time. Brew McCoy, finally a volunteer, commits to Tennessee. Your thoughts on that? That has got to help out Josh Heupel in this offense so much, because even with the potential of adding another receiver via the transfer portal, just having those two big bodies and McCoy and Tillman on the outside allows who we think will probably be Jalin Hyatt in the inside right now to really flourish. Tennessee got a whole lot better on offense last week.
Absolutely. I think it is huge. And anybody who has followed my work, reads my work, knows how I felt about that receiver position opposite of Cedric Tillman. Cedric Tillman, all SEC receiver. He's going to be the next Bayless Jones, Jawan Jennings, Josh Palmer type to get drafted after what I think will be another terrific season if he can stay healthy. But I was not a fan of Ramel Keaton starting opposite of Cedric Tillman. And all due respect to Ramel Keaton, I just don't think he's an SEC-level starting receiver. Brew McCoy does have something to prove. He's battled inconsistencies throughout his career. He's not as reliable at the moment as a Cedric Tillman because he hasn't completely proven himself, but he's a former five-star. You know he has the talent. You know he has the ability to be a game changer. And man, if he can really click on all cylinders on Rocky Top and you have Brew McCoy, or as I like to call him, Bruh McCoy, alongside Cedric Tillman and Jalin Hyatt takes the step that he needs to take, then you're looking at a completely different offense than maybe you initially anticipated. Because although you have Hendon Hooker and Cedric Tillman coming back, I still thought the offense maybe got a little worse. You lose a tackle you trust in Cade Mays. You lose a couple receivers that you really trusted and didn't have any obvious answers to fill those spots. And again, Brew McCoy still has something to prove, but you feel a whole lot better about Brew McCoy than you do Ramel Keaton, quite frankly. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Eric. Tennessee's offense got a whole lot better with the addition of Brew McCoy, simply because it takes pressure off of Hendon and Cedric.
It absolutely does. Ben McKee, you can follow him on Twitter at BenMcKee14 and check out all of his work covering baseball, doing a great job there at BallQuest.com. And pretty soon he'll be covering everything else at BallQuest.com, but hopefully not too soon. Still about a month and change left here this baseball season. Ben, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, that's my buddy Ben McKee. Please check out his work and give him a follow on Twitter if you aren't already, BenMcKee14. That's going to do it here for this edition of your Monday Locked On Vols. Twitter Tuesday coming up. Get me in those DMs, those questions, comments, whatever you got, at _Kaner and at Locked On Vols. It's when you take over the show each Tuesday right here on Locked On Vols. Go ahead and give out Locked On SEC a shout out. Give it a listen. Make that your second listen. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC, does an awesome job. Make that your second listen behind Locked On Vols, which is your first listen each and every day. Hey, let's do it again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Monday, everybody.